Welcome to the Counter Vortex with your ranter, Bill Weinberg, ranting at you in the wee hours of March 21st, 2024, as always from my apartment on Manhattan's Lower East Side, which fortunately is not under aerial bombardment. We must return this evening to the escalating controversies coast to coast around the question of anti-Semitism as Israel continues to commit, at a minimum, massive war crimes and quite possibly genocide in the Gaza Strip. That is not my opinion, but the opinion of the World Court or International Court of Justice, which has, as we know, issued provisional measures on Israel, citing a plausible risk of genocide in Gaza, quote unquote. And we remain for another week poised at a tipping point where we could either take a step back from the brink of everything getting much, much worse, or go over that brink. Israel continues to prepare a ground invasion of the southern Gaza city of Rafah, where 1.5 million displaced Palestinians have sought shelter. The Israeli military says it plans to relocate a significant number of them to zones in the center of the Gaza Strip, which they are calling humanitarian islands, quote, unquote. Humanitarian islands, eh? Sounds to me like a hideous euphemism for concentration camps. If Gaza has been a ghetto, in Masha Gessen's observation, Israel now appears to be preparing to clear the ghetto and move to the next phase of the genocidal game. I'm sorry, I cannot avoid this analogy. And elements of the Israeli leadership are now openly embracing genocidal rhetoric. There's one outrageous case I need to bring your attention to concerning something that actually took place not in the Gaza Strip, but in Jerusalem. Did you follow this one? Israel's Minister of National Security, Itamar Ben-Gvir, praised the killing of a 12-year-old Palestinian boy by a border guard at Shufat refugee camp in East Jerusalem, March 12th. In a Telegram post, Ben-Gvir, who is considered an extremist even within Israel's far-right ruling coalition, applauded the soldier and expressed his support for his actions. Quote, "I support the border guard fighters who are operating at this time and are risking their lives now against dozens of Arab rioters in Shufat. I support the soldier who killed the terrorist who tried to shoot fireworks at him and the troops. This is exactly how you should act against terrorists, with determination and precision." End quote. In the video footage capturing the killing, the Palestinian boy, identified as Rami al-Halhouli, is shown apparently playing with fireworks and holding them above his head before he suddenly falls to the ground upon being shot. There is no indication of any riot. It's an otherwise peaceful scene, and the border guards were not in immediate proximity. Rami was presumably shot by a sniper in a watchtower overlooking the refugee camp. When asked about his remarks on the Telegram instant messaging app, at a press conference later, Ben-Gvir responded, quote, "You say he's a 12-year-old. I say he's a 12-year-old terrorist who endangered our officers. The officer should be commended, not investigated," end quote. So, if we want evidence of genocidal intent. Well, I hope the International Court of Justice is taking note. But wait, there's more. This from the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, March 7th. Head of Jaffa Yeshiva says all Gazans should be killed. That's the headline verbatim from the text. Rabbi Eliyahu Mali, the head of the Hester Sherat Moshe Yeshiva, or seminary school, in Jaffa, said in a yeshiva conference on Thursday, March 7th, that the entire population in the Gaza Strip should be killed. Quote, "The message in this is very clear. If you will not kill them, they will kill you. Today's terrorists are the children of the previous operation that you kept alive. And the women are actually the ones who create the terrorists." End quote. Mali was asked if the elderly should also be killed, and he answered, quote, "There are no innocents. Even an old man is capable of picking up a rifle and shooting." End quote. Mali said that there is no difference between, quote, the 18, 16, 20, 30-year-old man holding a weapon at you and the children in Gaza. Today, he is a baby. Today, he is a child. Tomorrow, he is a fighter. Today's 18-year-old terrorists were the 8-year-old children 10 years ago in the previous operation," end quote. A reference to 2014's Operation Protective Edge, as it was called, which left some 2,000 Palestinians dead. And, of course, there's some truth to that last line. But what's really alarming is that the conclusion Rabbi Eliyahu Mali draws is not that there is a vicious cycle at work that needs to be somehow broken rather than escalated, but rather that the perceived enemy population needs to be exterminated. This is an open embrace of genocide. Now, this rabbi is not actually in the Israeli government, but he is a figure of some respect in the country, and it is indicative of an atmosphere. Again, I hope that the jurists at the International Court of Justice are taking note. And this is the backdrop to my anguish over the accusations of blood libel which are being made against pro-Palestinian protesters here in the United States, including in this instance. From NBC, Dallas-Fort Worth, February 13th, a baby killer anti-Semitic graffiti sprayed on Dallas City Councilwoman's fence. From the text, a Dallas City Councilwoman shared photos Sunday, February 11th, after discovering what she considered to be hateful anti-Jewish symbols and language scrawled across her North Dallas fence in red ink. Kara Mendelson said the incident made her think about her grandparents who escaped Poland and came to America. Quote, "They would say to all of us grandkids, this could happen to you. And we would say, no, America is a great country. Everybody is welcome. Everybody is safe. And when I saw it, my heart sank. I thought, maybe they were right. Maybe I was too naive," she said. Mendelson posted multiple images of the graffiti with the repeated phrase, "baby killer," drawn all over her wooden fence. On October 11th, 2023, the Dallas City Council approved a resolution supporting Israel and condemning Hamas, a measure supported by Mendelson, of course. Since then, there have been repeated demonstrations by Palestinian supporters calling for a ceasefire resolution In January, a group of pro-Palestinian protesters marched and rallied outside Mendelssohn's home. The Dallas Holocaust and Human Rights Museum issued a statement Monday, February 12th, saying, quote, "The Dallas Holocaust and Human Rights Museum strongly condemns the harassment of Dallas City Council member Kara Mendelssohn, which has been ongoing for months and culminated in the vandalism of her home with vile anti-Semitic graffiti," end quote. Now, politically, of course, I am on the side of those who are protesting Kara Mendelssohn, but I must take issue with this graffiti attack. Mendelssohn, we may assume, did not personally kill children. She is complicit as a propagandist, but not a personal baby killer. But more importantly, baby killer is itself traditionally a propaganda term. In case you are not familiar with the term blood libel, I read from the passage about it on the website of the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, a good, concise explanation. From the text, the term blood libel refers to the false allegation that Jews used the blood of non-Jewish, usually Christian, children for ritual purposes. The Nazis made effective use of the blood libel to demonize Jews, with Julius Streicher's newspaper Der Strömer making frequent use of ritual murder imagery in its anti-Semitic propaganda. Historically, blood libels often took place close to Passover, when Jews were charged with using the blood of Christian children to bake matzahs. The proximity of such charges to Easter was thus also often associated with the continuing belief that Jews were responsible for the passion and crucifixion of Jesus. Blood libels, together with allegations of well poisoning, were a major theme in Jewish persecution in Europe throughout the Middle Ages and into the modern period. They were a central component in the development of modern anti-Semitism in the 19th century. Blood libel accusations often led to pogroms, violent riots launched against Jews and frequently encouraged by government authorities. End quote. Yet making the accusation of blood libel rhetoric against protesters is certainly, shall we say, complicated by the fact that Israel actually is killing children in very large numbers. I will point out that 13,000, close to half of those killed in Gaza since October 7th, have been children, according to the latest figures from UNICEF, which writes that many thousands more are suffering from severe malnutrition and do not even have the energy to cry, quote unquote. Okay, let's go deeper into anguish here, shall we? So, in case you missed it, big controversy at the University of California at Santa Barbara, with the campus multicultural center being shut down by accusations of anti-Semitism. A UC Santa Barbara doctoral student, Charlene Macaria, held a 7-day hunger strike in protest of this earlier this month. And wouldn't it be great if no actual anti-Semitism were in evidence? Alas, indeed, some of the campus protesters, or their sympathizers at least, have provided our Zionist political enemies with very convenient propaganda. I read from the Jerusalem Post of February 29th. I will be interspersing this account with some of my own commentary from the text. On Tuesday, February 27th, Jewish students were harassed at the University of California, Santa Barbara's Multicultural Center, MCC, when signs and messages targeting a Jewish student government president and other Jewish students were placed at the MCC, on its social media accounts, and a student dorm room. According to Santa Barbara Hillel, the Foundation for Jewish Campus Life, its staff members and a group of Jewish students entered the MCC where there were signs on the door warning, "Zionists not allowed," quote unquote. The students were confronted by a mob of their peers who shouted at them, said Santa Barbara Hillel. Okay, now, in the context of a campus situation where the pro-Israel students can be identified by their affiliation with a campus body such as Hillel, maybe this makes a little more sense. But when I see a sign that says "Zionists not allowed," my immediate question is, how are you going to tell who's a Zionist? Will I be deemed a Zionist by the shape of my nose? By my accent or mannerisms? It isn't like the word Zionist hasn't become a code word for Jew in anti-Semitic discourse. Just like thug and welfare queen have become code in ugly American racist verbiage, at least in public, when it is necessary to resort to code. And you don't have to be a Zionist to recognize this, I hope. More from the text. This is going to get better. Hang on. Santa Barbara Hillel said that similar messages were also placed on the MCC's now deleted social media accounts, with one alleged remark asking, quote, "Why does our school support a regime to feast on the blood of our fellow humans?" End quote. The Hillel statement said this invoked classic anti-Semitic blood libel. End quote. Yeah, feast on the blood of our fellow humans is ill-chosen wording. I mean, if you want to avoid anti-Semitic tropes, you kind of walked right into that one with the word feast, fellas. And I must add the caveat that this alleged social media post has been deleted, and we aren't even told what platform it was on, so there's no way of checking. Google did not help, and the source for this claim is the critics of the MCC. So some skepticism may be warranted. On the other hand, the MCC seems not to have denied it. But to continue, more from the text. This is where we get to the big finish. "Zionists not welcome," quote unquote, was found on Tuesday, February 27th, scrawled on the door of a dorm room with an arrow pointing to a mezuzah, a religious talisman traditionally placed on every door frame in a Jewish home, end quote. Okay, a mezuzah, if you don't know, is a kind of usually decorative sheath or canister that holds a small scroll with a verse from the Torah, meaning the first five books of the Bible, the Old Testament, in case you don't know, and typically attached to the door or doorpost of Jewish homes, as stated. So it appears that a symbol of Judaism is being targeted as a Zionist, quote unquote. So the idiot who did the graffiti in question abetted Zionist talking points and propaganda. And this is where the ritual squawking that anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism falls flat on its face. Returning to the text, UC Santa Barbara, Students for Justice in Palestine, SJP, and the local chapter of Jewish Voice for Peace, JVP, issued a joint statement in regard to the controversy, acknowledging that, quote, many students, especially Jewish students, Palestinian students, and students of color, are feeling hurt and confused due to actions surrounding the Multicultural Center this week. While neither SJP nor JVP was involved with the planning or execution of these events, and the many instances of inappropriate language made by individuals were not endorsed by either of our organizations, we know that as student organizers, we must participate in the healing from harm caused. We have begun a process of accountability within our organizing spaces and will continue to work in the community to unlearn oppressive and discriminatory systems, end quote. Okay, not a bad statement, but a little bit less than explicit about what are considered instances of inappropriate language, quote unquote. A link to a photo of the door graffiti on a Hillel Instagram account ran with the story, so I'm afraid that skepticism about the veracity of this claim is not warranted. Unless you really want to get into false flag conspiracy theories about Hillel, like they go so far as to forge or stage the photo, one hopes not, although one also hopes that Palestine solidarity activists would be more astute, shall we say. This incident does not give me a lot of faith that the mantra, anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism, is anything other than a glib, empty, get-out-of-jail-free card for at least a segment of the American left, or ostensible American left, because I would argue that this is not left-wing thinking. More from a March 14th account on the Santa Barbara Independent. From the text, the signs in question at the MCC read, Zionists not welcome, and stay away from our kitchen too, quote unquote, referencing plans to use the MCC's kitchen to cook a Shabbat meal for UCSB's Jewish students. These signs, among others, appeared on the MCC's official Instagram account with the caption, in case we aren't clear, let us spell it out, end quote. This raises the question of whether the Jewish organization cooking the Shabbat meal is explicitly Zionist or pro-Israel. The campus Hillel chapter seems to be very prominent, and they would certainly fall into that category. But it would be better to make it explicitly clear. This is a criticism of the Santa Barbara Independent. Continuing, a target of some of the signs was Tessa Wexler, the daughter of Soviet Jewish refugees and USSB's student president, whose office is in the MCC. One sign read, you can run, but you can't hide, Tessa Wexler, quote unquote. In the days following the closure, multiple MCC staff members and student interns were doxed, publicly identified for aggressive harassment on Instagram and X, formerly Twitter, by national groups advocating for Israel, end quote. Yeah, here on the East Coast, there has actually been a doxing truck that has gone around the campuses electronically displaying the IDs and images of Palestine solidarity activists. I read from the Columbia Spectator here in Manhattan, from the text, a doxing truck, quote unquote, circled Columbia's Morningside campus on Wednesday, January 31st, as part of, quote, national days of activism on college campuses across the country to stand up against anti-Semitism, according to a news release from conservative group Accuracy in Media. Driving down Broadway, the truck displayed names and photos of Columbia students under the words, Columbia's leading anti-Semites. The truck also promoted a new website that, quote, features a petition that urges employers to blacklist applicants. They actually use that word, blacklist. Alongside the words, boycott, divest, and sanction these anti-Semites, end quote. Ha ha, very funny. Obviously a play on the, call to boycott, divest, and sanction Israel. This also gets even worse. From ABC News, January 23rd, NYPD investigates serious crimes in apparent attack on pro-Palestinian protesters. A group of demonstrators at Columbia University say they were attacked with what they believe to have been a chemical-based weapon, quote-unquote, during a gathering in support of Palestinians amid the ongoing Israel-Hamas war. The New York Police Department told ABC News, there is a report on file for assault after the protesters said they smelled a foul odor and began to feel nauseated, accompanied by headaches, during a protest Friday, January 19th. Students for Justice in Palestine said several students have been hospitalized or have sought medical care following the incident. Victims reported symptoms such as vomiting, nausea, chest and abdominal pain, and headaches. Sources told ABC News that the NYPD has recovered surveillance video of two men spraying an unknown substance at the scene before the pro-Palestinian rally at Columbia University. Detectives are working with Columbia to identify and locate the two males. NYPD is not currently releasing the video, the sources said, end quote. And how has Columbia University reacted to this? By suspending the campus chapters of Students for Justice in Palestine and Jewish Voice for Peace, for which the university is now being sued by the New York Civil Liberties Union. Now, in this case, Columbia University, the Palestine activists appear to have done nothing at all inappropriate, and it is the pro-Israel activists who are resorting to the most sleazy and fucked up tactics imaginable. However, I will point out that just this past weekend, March 17th, Effie's Cafe, an Israeli restaurant on the Upper West Side, not far from Columbia University, which may or may not be relevant, was targeted in a graffiti attack on the sidewalk outside, reading, Free Gaza, and form line here to support genocide, quote unquote, indicating the door of the restaurant. Serving shakshuka supports genocide? You got to explain that one to me, sorry. This has become a big to-do with local politicians showing up to support the restaurant the following day, including Congressman Gerald Nadler. And none of the reportage I've seen indicates that Effie's Cafe was taking any kind of public stance in support of Israel politically. I don't think serving the cuisine counts. This does touch on the whole question of gastronomic appropriation and whether there is an Israeli cuisine per se. For instance, shakshuka originates in North Africa, but that's not really relevant to this conversation, and we'll save that for another podcast. Okay, back to the West Coast. UC Berkeley. You may have noted that activists for several weeks blocked the middle section of Sather Gate, the main entrance to the campus, with yellow tape to press their demand that the university divest from Israel. Finally, on March 10th, university authorities removed the tape, and the activist replaced it with a large banner reading, quote, "Today is the first day of Ramadan. Israel and the U.S. are starving, 2.2 million. Gazans have nothing to break their fast with," end quote. And later a student, presumably a pro-Israel student, tore down the banner. NBC Bay Area, March 11th, reported claims that Jewish students were not allowed to pass through Sather Gate without harassment or intimidation, quote unquote. And when they held a campus rally against anti-Semitism, or perceived anti-Semitism, under the slogan, "Liberate the Gate," they actually forded a creek that runs through campus, presumably Strawberry Creek, to avoid having to enter through the Sather Gate. Now, harassment and intimidation were denied by one of the interviewed Palestine activists, although with the line that their intent was not to engage with Zionists, quote unquote, when the charge had been of targeting Jews, not Zionists. I'll also note that I spent some time on the Berkeley campus, and I don't believe there is any part of it which is exclusively accessible through the Sather Gate, so I've a hunch that the creek fording incident could have been a stunt for the cameras, and NBC Bay Area did air footage of it in this clip. All of this follows an incident, February 27th, when a campus event organized by the group Students Support Israel, featuring an Israeli Defense Forces veteran as speaker, was confronted by protesters, resulting in a broken window. And since then, billboards have appeared at several locations around Berkeley, reading, quote, "You don't have to go to law school to know anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism," end quote. This is apparently a reference to the decision by the Berkeley Law School student body to bar Zionist speakers. The billboards were rented by a group calling itself JewBelong.com, and quite predictably, the billboards are being defaced, or improved, depending on your point of view, with slogans such as "Free Palestine." Of course, there's nothing wrong with that slogan, but I must also note, alas, that in a problematic move by some local activists earlier this month, the sidewalk outside Boy Chick Bagels on College Avenue in Berkeley was stenciled with the words, "Israeli baby killer," quote unquote. And again, I want to know if Boy Chick Bagels actually supports Israel in any vocal and organized way. Because if they do not, this was an anti-Semitic attack, straight up. I will also note, although it is not linked in any explicit way to what is happening in Gaza, but is just generally indicative of the atmosphere in this country, that on the day of the local St. Patrick's Day parade in Cincinnati, Saturday, March 16th, a big banner reading, "Save Ireland from the Jews," quote unquote, with the E in Jews replaced by the Star of David, was draped from an overpass above a main traffic thoroughfare through the city. Not good. And even from the standpoint of fighting anti-Semitism, this conflation of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism is extremely counterproductive. I will note again President Trump's executive order of December 11, 2019, ostensibly extending civil rights protections to Jewish students on college campuses, which officially embraces the problematic working definition of anti-Semitism, drafted by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, IHRA, and therefore actually criminalizes opposition to the oppression and expropriation of the Palestinians, making a consistent anti-racist position legally impossible, and thereby, paradoxically, abetting anti-Semitism. This IHRA working definition of anti-Semitism lists contemporary examples of anti-Semitism, quote unquote. On this list, officially endorsed but not actually quoted in the executive order, is the following item, quote, denying the Jewish people their right to self-determination, e.g., by claiming that the existence of a state of Israel is a racist endeavor, unquote. Okay, let's say it plainly. The state of Israel is a racist endeavor, as it is predicated on the lie of a land without people for a people without land, as the cliche has it, and on the expropriation of the Palestinians of their lands and rights. Israel is hardly the only state predicated on racism, but this nonetheless remains a reality. So consistent single standard anti-racism is essentially impossible under the terms of this executive order, which I will note has not been overturned by Biden. Opposing both Jew hatred and the oppression and occupation of the Palestinians is now verboten. Just by way of example, this Jewish commentator, yours truly, Bill Weinberg, has been explicitly targeted by Jew haters. Hate mail, harassing phone messages, etc., including from a Ku Klux Klan chapter in New Jersey, fortunately, not recently. Yet I am now labeled an anti-Semite under federal policy by virtue of my opposition to a state founded on racist assumptions and practice. In addition to being bad for the Palestinians and their stateside advocates, which is obvious, this is also bad for the Jews. It can't do other than play into the hands of those who would actually conflate anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism in practice, or use the guise of the former to sell us the latter. And yes, they do exist. Now, any expression of opposition to Jew hatred will be officially tainted by a double standard that embraces the oppression of others. And I will point out that Trump, on the campaign trail, is now using this as a line of attack, very explicitly, having just said this week in a podcast hosted by his former White House aide, Sebastian Gorka, a rather notorious personality who you may recall, quote from Trump, any Jewish person that votes for Democrats hates their religion. They hate everything about Israel, and they should be ashamed of themselves because Israel will be destroyed, end quote. Meaning will be destroyed if Biden wins, obviously, which is certainly rather ironic, as the pro-Palestinian protesters are calling Biden Genocide Joe for continuing to underwrite Israel's military in the midst of this carnage. I will happily note an alternative definition of anti-Semitism being put forth by international scholars in a document called the Jerusalem Declaration, which rejects this simplistic conflation. I will read from the statement. Quote, our aim is twofold. One, to strengthen the fight against anti-Semitism by clarifying what it is and how it is manifested. 2, to protect a space for an open debate about the vexed question of the future of Israel/Palestine. Statements that focus on Israel-Palestine should be read with a view to context. Context can include the intention behind an utterance, or a pattern of speech over time, or even the identity of the speaker. So, for example, hostility to Israel could be an expression of an anti-Semitic animus, or it could be a reaction to human rights violations, or it could be the emotion that a Palestinian person feels on account of their experience at the hands of the Israeli state. In short, judgment and sensitivity are needed in applying these guidelines to concrete situations. End quote. Thank you. So we need to be clear. What is the meaning of that mantra that we hear endlessly from activists? Anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism. Does anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism mean that we oppose both Zionism and anti-Semitism and are actually serious about opposing both? Or does it mean that anti-Semitism doesn't actually exist and that any stigmatization or tarring of Jews is actually anti-Zionism? I mean, you have to be clear about which you mean, because that latter formulation is actually anti-Semitic and plays right into the hands of the conflaters. Israel's genocide in Gaza inevitably provides an environment in which anti-Semitism can flourish, and anti-Semites will inevitably exploit anti-Zionism to launder their propaganda. And the fact that Zionists will inevitably exploit legitimate fears of anti-Semitism to distract from or justify Israel's massive crimes increases, not decreases, our responsibility to be clear about what anti-Semitism is and what it isn't, and to forthrightly and without equivocation oppose it. One last thing I want to point out. Israel is becoming more and more of a liability to U.S. imperialism, a case first made by the odious wonks Mearsheimer and Walt in their very problematic 2007 book, The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy, and seen today in the open tensions that have now arisen between Biden and Bibi Netanyahu. Perhaps there will even eventually be an aid cutoff and economic sanctions against Israel. But will this happen in the context of a global de-escalation, including justice and real self-determination for Palestine, or, on the contrary, an orgy of anti-Jewish hatred, which will only play into the hands of Israel's advocates of transfer, finishing off the work of ethnic cleansing that began in 1948? The answer depends, in large part, on how accurately and usefully progressive forces can frame the debate today. I know that the people on either side who most need to hear this aren't even going to listen, but maybe I have reached a few of you. I do what I can. This has been Bill Weinberg with the Counter Vortex. Check us out online at countervortex.org, where everything I've been ranting about is all fastidiously blogged up, hyperlinked, and documented. Please do support us on Patreon. I will point out that raising these ruthless criticisms and saying things that neither side wants to hear on this and related questions isn't winning me a lot of fans. Our Patreon supporters had been plateaued at 60 for quite a while, and I was really hoping to break that ceiling, and in the past weeks, the number has actually gone down to 59, which is really rather frustrating. Somebody out there, take up the slack. I'm only asking a dollar or two per week. I know that most of you can afford it. Patreon.com/countervortex. Join the countervortex, join the resistance, and rant on you next time.